How do you use spells and reversal magic to change and tip the scales of fate in your favor? Up next, Jason Miller joins us as we talk about sorcery on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Jason Miller with us. Jason has devoted 25-plus years to studying practical magic in its many forms. He's the author of the now classic Protection and Reversal Magic, as well as the Elements of Spellcrafting, The Sorcerer's Secrets, and Financial Sorcery. He also runs the Strategic Sorcery Training Course, Take Back Your Mind Program, and the Sorcery of the Hecate Training Course. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Jason, I'm looking forward to this, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, George. I'm really happy to be here.
Tell me a little bit about you. How did you get involved in all of this?
Oh, man. Well, we have to go way back, even further than 25 years.
Wow.
When I was a little kid, 5 years old, I remember this very distinctly. I was on a playground, and I don't know if I had hit my head or anything like that, but I remember looking down at the sand. You know, this is the 70s, so playgrounds weren't padded. Back then it was, you know, a dangerous world of metal and sand.
Yeah.
And I looked up, and I had this distinct, it's kind of crazy, but I looked up and it was like looking up from the entire world, as if the entire world was there at my feet and I was looking up out of reality itself. And it was a feeling that I could never shake. And this was followed by a bunch of, you might call them out of body experiences, you might call them frozen time experiences where nothing seems to be happening around me and I can sense other things around me. Nothing important was said and nothing terrible happened to me or anything like that. But it was this look behind things that I was never able to shake. And even though these kind of experiences went away around the time that I was six, they stuck with me, almost like a feeling like this is more real.
Yeah.
And so as I got older and you get to start to explore the world on your own a little bit, this is one of those aspects that I really wanted to explore. And so even though my parents weren't religious, I asked to go to church and they would drop me off at church, and I sought answers there. I sought answers in books and teachers, and I was really, really fortunate because even though I grew up in rural central New Jersey, I was, before the age of 21, I was able to make friends with several mentors. A teacher at my high school was also a Rosicrucian and involved in ceremonial magic herself. I was able to make friends with the owner of a conjure shop. I know you had Star Cassis on recently,
mm-hmm.
So somebody
sure
who did that kind of magic. And I was able to make friends with John Reynolds, who's the first Westerner to ever be ordained as a Tibetan shaman, what's called the Ngakpa. And so all of these kind of people and books were just really helpful to get a really early firm grounding.
Did your family, Jason, freak out when you started studying all this?
You know, amazingly enough, they weren't necessarily supportive right at the beginning. And you know, you have to place this in time. So by the time I'm in high school now, it's the late 80s, and everything is about the satanic panic.
Right, right.
So Geraldo Rivera and even the local newspapers are running things on, you know, is your daycare run by Satanists and
witches?
Right, you know, and of course the FBI has since come out and said, no, actually none of this happened. And some people were recently exonerated after 20 years in jail. But so they had this fear that I was getting involved in something, but it didn't take them long to kind of turn around and say, well, you know, if this is what you're into and it's not affecting the rest of your life negatively, that's fine. And by the time I was in college, I had a little stone circle in the backyard that my parents helped me put together. And I would have other like-minded people over, and we would do rituals in the backyard. And it was wonderful.
And you've gotten better and better and better at it. Now, what you call sorcery, some other people might call witchcraft. What's the difference?
Well, you know, today the word witchcraft can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. So for a lot of people, witchcraft is a religion. And that's fine, but because it's a religion, and it's a growing religion, a fast-growing religion.
Which you would call Wicca?
Which you would call Wicca, and there's a couple other things that would fall under the category of witchcraft.
Wicca, by the way, sounds better than witchcraft when you talk about religion, doesn't it?
It does. You know what? It's a lot better if you're looking for time off at work.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is the thing, though. If you say witchcraft today, you might be, if somebody says they're a witch, you might be talking to someone who has no interest in practical magic at all. They may not even believe in it. They might just be interested in pagan gods, seasonal celebrations, and that kind of thing. And that's great. There's a whole wonderful religious culture around that. And same thing, there are a lot of people who call themselves magicians who are interested in Kabbalah, in mysticism, in spiritual growth, and that too is great. I call myself a sorcerer because while I'm interested in religion and I'm deeply interested in mysticism, I think these things can be reflected outward in the sense of magic, in the sense of touching reality and shifting it one way or another. And so when you say sorcery, there's kind of no mistaking it. This is someone who is affecting the world, or attempting to at least, by spell work. And it's also kind of bridging the gap between that high magic and folk magic. So I use the term sorcerer because it just fits.
All right. And now, as we move on with this, in your latest book, you depict every chapter with a cartoon of a sorcerer and a demon. Tell me why.
So there are a lot of people who take everything too seriously. And it's not that it shouldn't be taken seriously. It definitely should. But serious doesn't mean humorlessly. And sometimes we learn so much by just taking a wry look and making a joke about it. And it reveals a truth about a thing in a way that just attacking something, a concept head on, would not. So, for instance, like one of my chapters in the new book is called DIY, or Do It Yourself is Overrated. And this is because there are a lot of people who think that for a spell to work, you should write it yourself, that you should never use something that somebody else wrote, you should never have a tool that someone else made, you should make everything yourself. And I said, well, you know, there's a craft to be respected here. There are specialists, there are people who do amazing things. And so the cartoon is actually of the sorcerer holding up this wand, and he says, you know, I conjure thee by my crescent wrench. And the demon says, or I conjure you by my lunar wand. And the demon says, that's a crescent wrench. And it's just a way of saying, hey, you know, let's take another look at this idea, because taken to its extreme, it can be kind of ridiculous.
We're talking, of course, with Jason Miller, author of The Elements of Spellcrafting and also Protection and Reversal Magic. His website, strategicsorcery.net, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to talk about spells. What about curses, Jason? Do people actually put real curses on people?
I would love it if they didn't, but they do.
They do. They do. Do they have to know what they're doing to put a curse on somebody?
Well, I mean, curses can happen in all kinds of ways. I mean, goodness, you know, people can put accidental curses where they're doing what's called overlooking, where they're just jealous and they have a bunch of emotion bottled up and it's let go at a particular moment. This is something that, for instance, in a lot of traditional cultures, people don't let people touch their babies because the jealousy can come out as a curse or the evil eye or something like that. But then there are people who really, their concept of how to deal with the world is confrontational. So if they're going for a job and you're going for a job, rather than saying, let's do a spell for me to get promoted into this job, they think in terms of how do I take out the competition?
Which is negative, isn't it?
Which I think is a fairly negative view of the world.
Now, will that haunt the person putting the spell or the curse?
You know, it can, but it's not always in the way people think. So there's a couple ideas out there about this. One of them is that there's white magic and there's black magic. And I think in most people who practice magic today reject that idea. It's magic is like electricity. We can use it to do wonderful things and we can use it to do horrible things.
Right.
And sometimes using it to do, let's call it wrathful things, can be good for used for justice. So there are people who use curses to essentially get justice when there is no other justice to be had. So it's not that the curse itself is evil. It can have a good outcome. Similarly, you can do beneficial magic, but use it to support an evil person, in which case you're doing something terrible, right?
So I would think a spell generally sounds fun and nice. A curse sounds evil. Is that a pretty good perception?
Well, no, I wouldn't say a curse is evil.
You
it
wouldn't?
Depends on what you
Just the word sounds evil. I'm going to put a curse on you.
A lot of stuff around it. You know, we have built up a lot of stuff around this. But think about a terrible injustice. Think about someone wrongly convicted, someone who has been persecuted by an evil state.
Or framed.
And they put a curse on those who did it. Is it evil? Or is it their last recourse to justice? I don't know. I don't use a lot of curses myself. But I wish they were less popular than they are. I think anyone who owns a shop that sells spell supplies can tell you that after Love Magic, stuff used for cursing sells pretty darn well.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. But it is what it is. And more to your original question, it can blow up on you. But not because the curse itself is evil, but because if you do it all the time, if that's your go-to way of handling things,
if that's your intent,
then you're exposing yourself to those powers, right?
Yeah.
Those spirits, those things. It's kind of like
you're in a cloud of negativity.
Right. Imagine if you hung around all day with like a violent gang or you know, the mafia or something like that. Even if you don't have an interest in that, sooner or later, you're going to find yourself in a situation that you don't want to be in. And so if you have to engage in something like that because of justice or whatever it is, then you do whatever needs to be done, just like any other person, you know, who has to take a negative action against somebody or a disciplinary action against somebody. You do what needs to be done, and then you do whatever you can to move on and get back to the positive things in life. But if you focus on that, if you make that the emphasis of your work, then yeah, it gets real dark real quick, and your life follows for sure.
Jason, could you give us a couple examples of good spells and then negative curses that have worked on both cases?
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, positive spells. I just recently was working with someone who was having difficulty finding work for years.
Years, and wow.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a very difficult job market out there on the West Coast for what this person does. And so I appealed to the powers of Jupiter and some spirits that are connected with Jupiter. Because, you know, magicians and sorcerers, we like to invoke God or gods, and but we also kind of go down the chain a little bit and talk directly to the movers and shakers, those spirits that are not quite as high on the spiritual scale, so that we can get them to move a little bit. And I created what's called a talisman. So they blessed a talisman for this person to carry with them. And it was within just a few weeks that they found a job that paid as much as they were making back during the tech boom, which is good. And
that is
good. It took a couple of weeks, probably 3 weeks, if I'm remembering correctly. It doesn't matter. If you look at how long they had been unemployed, and then you insert this into it, you can say, okay, this is probably a direct influence on this situation.
It's almost a miracle.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's almost a miracle. So that's a good example of positive magic.
What about a curse? A negative curse.
Yeah.
Not that I want to dwell on it, but it sounds interesting.
Sure. Sure. So I wrote about a situation where I had a terrible neighbor.
You did.
A terrible person, and was keeping everyone up all night. And we were all, you know, it was...
The whole neighborhood was up in arms.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, a young guy lived alone and just would play video games and scream all night long. And
how old was he?
He was probably in his late 20s.
Jeez. All right. Apartment, house, what was it?
It was an apartment. It was like a duplex. So
okay.
Little,
so everybody was close.
Right next to one another.
All right.
And we eventually did. I wasn't the only worker in the neighborhood, actually. So even though this was a small little cul-de-sac of townhouses, I was not the only the only sorcerer there, which was kind of cool.
So you guys ganged up on him. What did you do?
Well, you know, we used what's called hot foot
what's
powder.
That?
And we laid a little bit on his doorstep, and
he was like he was gone when you did that, I take it, right?
Well, we invoked some hot spirits and things like that. Nothing to kill or harm. Just,
you don't want to hurt him.
Right. Just to uproot, you know, just make things uncomfortable, create a situation.
So he'd move.
And we opened this up to be like, you know, if he moves because he gets the best job offer in the world away, that's great. You know, like, that's optimal.
Everybody wins, though.
But we don't really care why. And he did. He moved shortly after we finally got the spell to work. But we actually had some trouble getting the spell to work.
Now, my question would be, though, that sometimes does it have a reverse where a worse neighbor moves in?
Well, that's life, isn't it? In this case, it didn't. We had, you know, somebody great moved in, and it all worked out for the best.
Stay with us, Jason. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about your work, the elements of spellcrafting, and then next hour we'll take phone calls, share your questions, your stories on sorcery. And welcome back. We're with the sorcerer and magician, Jason Miller. His works are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. So you put this curse on the guy, and he moved out.
He did.
And off he went. Was he happier?
I don't know. He is not the kind of guy I keep up with.
And how about the neighbor who replaced him? Pretty good?
Excellent.
Well, then it worked. It worked well, didn't it?
it worked well, no harm, no foul, and then everybody, the important thing is that everybody then got back to their normal lives of production and working on good things and generally being good people in the world, not kind of reveling in this, okay, well, who can we mess with next?
Yeah, exactly. Now, not that you would, mate, Jason, but could you have put a spell on the guy to hurt him physically?
Sure, yes. Things like that can happen.
Jeez.
And you know, things like that can happen with spells that aren't intended for that. So, for instance, God, I was very young, still in college, and a friend of my girlfriend's was being stalked, like, really, really badly. And this is before there was a ton of attention on the kind of stalking.
These wackos.
And,
yeah.
And problems that we have now. And so I did what's called a binding spell, a spell to stop someone from doing something, usually a horrible thing. And there was no intention of this person getting hurt or anything like that. There was every intention of this person hopefully just losing interest. But that's not how it worked out. How it worked out is that they got hurt falling off of a ladder climbing into her third story window.
Wow. See, synchronicity.
Stalking ended.
Yep. It happens. Now, does the person who is got the spell on them, the recipient, do they have to know about the spell or the curse in order for it to happen or not?
No, not at all. This is something that gets passed around. First of all, it gets passed around by those who don't really believe in magic, and that's fine. But they explain it away by saying, well, in cultures where everyone believes, there's a nocebo effect. People believe something bad is going to happen, so something bad does happen. Or it's the opposite of the placebo effect. And it also gets passed around by those practitioners who feel that everything happens through the power of the mind, so that you have to plant the suggestion. But in fact, spells like this work best if that person doesn't know what's going on.
Aha, okay.
Because, of course, it's very easy to protect yourself and reverse spells. And most of the world is aware of this. We're sort of, magically speaking, we're sort of out of that loop in very Protestant America, but Catholic countries, for instance, they're very hip to the idea of exorcism and protections and going to, let's say, the church and not just praying, but using holy water, oils, and things like this to psychically seal their house. And you find the same thing all over the world, indigenous cultures and everywhere.
What if you put a spell or a curse on someone and all of a sudden you change your mind and you want it lifted, you want it removed, you want it stopped? Can you do that?
It depends on what you did. The devil's always in the details, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know.
Or is it too late?
Well, it depends on how far along it is and what's, you can try. Let's put it that way. You can try and you should try. And honestly, if that's the case, you probably had no business doing it in the first place. But you should try. And even if there is some negative effect, if you later have a misgiving, or even if later you're saying, well, I did this to protect someone, let's say, and now that person is safe, I don't want this person to be followed by anything negative. You can then follow it up with a reversal for that person or a protection for that person or a blessing, however you want to do it.
If the spell or the curse, Jason, doesn't work, what went wrong?
Oh, God, it could be anything. One of the cartoons in the book, in fact, I think it's the first cartoon in the book, the sorcerer is in the new book. The sorcerer is asking to the demon to make it snow, bring a hail of ice and a storm of ice and snow. And the demon is like, it's July, man. I can get a cool rain, some hail maybe, but that's it. So the first thing is, are you influencing something that is within the scope of your powers and within influenceability, enchantability, I call it? You know, magic is an influence on reality. And sometimes miracles occur, absolutely paranormal, unexplainable things happen. But it doesn't always happen, and it's not even the norm. Usually things happen through coincidences after the spell is cast. And so we have to look at how, you know, maybe you're asking for something that is just never going to happen. On the other hand, maybe you didn't have a proper link. So you're doing this spell and you've summoned spirits or you've raised all this power, but you don't have anything linking it to a person, to a place, to what you're trying to influence. This is something that root work is particularly good at, creating these links. And then it could also be that you were not approaching it from the optimum direction. Let's take a court case.
All right.
Maybe you're doing something to bless your lawyer, but your lawyer is completely inept. So you make him twice as good, but he's still crap. And the other lawyer is great. So maybe a little confusion on the other lawyer, or just a general sweetening on the judge, or a blessing over the whole process might have been a better route. So sometimes people need to divine the best way to approach a situation. And then some times just go gangbusters, try every angle you can and see what sticks.
So let's talk about a little experiment that you've got, a spell to make an extra couple hundred dollars a week. How does that work?
Well, you know, it depends on what you do, first of all. If you are in a highly enchantable job, then what you can do is take a piece of parchment or a piece of paper, it doesn't have to be anything special, and you can inscribe some of the glyphs for making extra money. I have some glyphs in my book, Financial Sorcery, but you don't need those. You can look online.
And what do you mean by glyphs, Jason?
Oh, glyphs are symbols, sigils, magical symbols that have been used for a long time. And you can use symbols, for instance, you know, the Three Books of Occult Philosophy by Henry Cornelius Agrippa are written hundreds of years ago, and you can find them online now, well within public use. And you can use some of the glyphs from either Jupiter or Mercury to get things moving, or the sun to attract wealth, and you can create a talisman and call down those powers by using the Orphic hymns or different spells that you research associated with those powers, and carry it with you and see what happens. If you're in a very enchantable job, like, you know, if I was to do this, I make my money directly off of students and customers who take my classes. So this would probably manifest in terms of a bump in clientele. Same thing with somebody who made commission off sales or something like that. If, however, somebody worked for, let's say, the government, right? They've got sort of a set salary. And if they do well that week, they're still getting the same amount of money. So then perhaps something can come along their way, like an opportunity to participate in a focus group or a secondary job opportunity. You know, the one of the great things about today's economy, along with all the bad things, is that we all have the ability to do a little extra work from home over the internet. And so you do this spell, and somebody comes along and says, hey, you know, I found this way to make this, or hey, you know, you've got great designs, let's market some t-shirts, or whatever it is. Something like that occurs.
You have talked about the three do's and don'ts about spell working. What are they?
The three do's and don'ts about spell working. You know, do go for something measurable. Don't go for something immeasurable. Mm-hmm. Don't go for something that is vague. So, for instance, if I want to cast a spell to lose 30 pounds, that's measurable. I've either lost 30 pounds in 3 months or I haven't lost 30 pounds in 3 months. If I do it to, quote, lose weight, right, then at the end of 3 months, if I have lost 3 pounds, then I have lost weight. Technically, the intent was fulfilled. No good, right? Do go for things that are inspiring, not small. You know, do go for things.
Go for the home run.
Yeah, go. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, you know, I want to make enough money to get by, but I don't want to make a lot of money. I don't want to be greedy. I don't want to be, you know, someone who makes a ton. And I said, well, what if the only way to make enough is actually to go for making as much as you can, for maximizing things.
And give it away. Help people.
Right. You know, I said the way that people get the bronze is by going for the gold. No one sits up at the Olympics and go, you know, I'm going to shoot for the bronze medal.
Can't wait to be in third place.
Right. So your goal should be something that is hard. It should be something that is worth doing magic for. But the flip side of that is the other don't. Don't go for something that is impossible or so improbable that it may as well be impossible. So the big one that everyone always talks about is, I want to win Mega Millions. I want to win the Powerball.
Right.
Enough money that I never have to
think astronomical.
Right. You are more likely to be hit by magic, hit by lightning twice than you are to win this. So even if you do massive amounts of magic and you triple your chances or you make yourself 75% more likely, it's still one against several million in odds as opposed to one against hundreds of millions in odds, but still not really something that is very likely to occur, even with magic.
Would you say that magic is on the uptick these days?
Oh, goodness, yes.
How come?
There is a huge amount of interest in magic, and there's a number of reasons. People, you know, the pews are getting empty at a lot of the traditional churches and religions, and so people are exploring. Because there's still this hole in people's, this God-shaped hole, as they say, that forces people to kind of think about spirit and spirituality and the unknown. My friend Gordon calls this the re-enchantment of the world, that people are actively seeking out the mystery and the enchantment of the world, and because they notice something lacking in the purely scientific and materialist worldview. There's something, even just beyond meaning, there's something missing. There's a piece that is not filled in. And so they're looking for that, and one of the places that they look is magic. You see a lot of young people interested in magic. It becomes much more accepted than it ever was. And part of this too is just you know the world is now being run by baby boomers who lived through the 1960s and the counterculture. So there's not a whole lot that was terrible, you know, that's terribly weird in comparison to that.
Well, it's pretty dramatic that you can do this and gain things and make things really happen. Is it easy for most people or is it difficult?
Well, it can be easy your first couple times. There's a weird sort of beginner's luck where people try a spell and it almost always works. And I don't know if it's the sheer amount of mystery and energy that they put into this first step into the unknown that brings them this sort of added boost, or if it's simply the fact that their mind isn't burdened down with a whole ton of books and theories yet. But their first spells very often work really well, enough to say, hey, this is real. Like, there's a good chance that you just really did something with your mind.
All right, Jason, we're going to come back and take phone calls on magic and sorcery next on Coast to Coast AM.